host and camera start actually coming up to the women they've been looking at and engaging them in little cameo interviews full of sideways leers and salacious entendres. Some of the interviewees are actual civilians, but some are always what Max refers to as ringers, meaning professional porn actresses. And so the viewer is treated to the classic frat house fantasy of moving via just a couple of singles bar, hey there babe, lines, from scoping out an attractive woman to having wild and anatomically diverse sex with her, all while one of his buddies captures the whole thing on tape. So let's observe that whereas traditional, quote-unquote dramatic porn videos simulate the 100% sexualization of real life, namely by creating a kind of alternative real world in which everyone from secretaries to firemen to dental hygienists is always just one prompt away from frantic intercourse, Gonzo videos push the envelope by offering the apparent sexualization of actual real life by, for instance, combining real footage of babes on the Khan beach with scripted footage of seduction and explicit sex. Gonzo thus obviously seems like the porn equivalent of the mainstream trend in docudramas, shows like Cops, real-life adventures of third-shift trauma surgeons, and so on. The issue of who exactly invented Gonzo being impossibly vexed and so notwithstanding, it is true that Max Hardcore is famous as a director for several things. 1. Being incredibly disciplined about budgets and tactical logistics, right down to forcing his crew and staff to wear identical jumpsuits of scarlet nylon so that they look like a national ski team. Max's shoots are described, by Max, as, quote, almost military operations, close quote. 2. Not only employing ringers, but actually sometimes being able to talk real live civilian little girls on the beach or in the mall into coming on back to the special Max World RV and having anal sex on camera. This is not a rumor. It is documented as fact. No theories on this phenomenon or on the civilian female's possible motives or susceptibilities will even be attempted here. The relevant questions are just too huge and stupefying. 3. Being the first in mainstream, non-fetish adult video to perpetrate on women levels of violation and degradation that would have been unthinkable even a few years ago. With respect to item 3, Max, after detailing for your correspondents the vow and avocations that led him into the adult industry, a tale too literally incredible even to think about fact-checking and trying to print, informs us that he is and always has been adult video's, quote, cutting-edge blade, and that other less bold and original filmmakers have systematically stolen and used his, Max's, degradations of women as a blueprint for their own subsequent shabby and derivative films' degradations. Max is here referring not only to Silvera and Byron and the rest of the Gonzo-come-latelys, but to directors like Gregory Dark and Rob Black, who are the spearheads of a certain other hot 90s genre called, by Dick Filth, in print, Bizarro Sleaze. Gregory Dark's recent Snake Pit and The Shocking Truth do things like seat a starlet in an interview chair and then have an off-camera inquisitor ask her, for instance, whether she thinks she's a slut and whether she thinks she's eventually going to go to hell for her insatiable sluttiness and how she felt about the sexual attentions of her piggish stepfather, which example then segues into an SS where four men dressed stepfatherishly in bow ties and cardigans and all with plastic pig snouts strapped onto their faces gangbang her into a stupor. Whereas Mr. Rob Black, compared to whom Gregory Dark is Frank Capra, offers entertainment like gangbangs of paraplegic women, women being made to eat Ritz crackers that have been skeeted on, and men taking turns spitting in women's faces. Your correspondents elect here to submit an opinion. Dark's and Black's movies are not for men who want to be aroused and maybe jerk off. They are for men who have problems with women and want to see them humiliated. Whether Bizarro Sleaze might conceivably help armchair misogynists work out some of their anger at females is irrelevant. Catharsis is not these films' intent. Their intent is to capitalize on a market demand that quite clearly exists. These directors' products, like Max Hardcore's, are near constant presences in adult video news's top sellers and renters lists. Dark's and Black's movies are vile. They are meant to be. And the truth is that in-your-face vileness is part of the schizoid direction porn's been moving in all decade. For just as adult entertainment has become more mainstream, meaning more widely available, more acceptable, more lucrative, more chic, boogie nights, it has become also more extreme, and not just on the bizarro margins. In nearly all hetero porn now, there is a new emphasis on anal sex, painful penetrations, degrading tableau, and the, at least, psychological abuse of women. In certain respects, this extremism may simply be porn's tracing Hollywood entertainment's own arc. It's hardly news that TV and legit film have also gotten more violent and explicit and raw in the last decade. So maybe. And yet there's something else. The psychodynamics of porn seem always to have involved a certain real degree of shame, self-loathing, perception of, quote, sin, and so on. This is held both on the performing end, I'm a nasty girl, I'm a little fuckhole, and on the consumption end, recall or get someone to tell you about the embarrassment of being seen at the ticket window of an adult theater, or the haunted faces of trench-coated men in Times Square, Boston's Combat Zone, San Francisco's Tenderloin. We note, though, that the faces of today's fans at the adult CES seem different, the affect more complex. An observer gets the odd sense that the average fan here feels slightly ashamed of being slightly ashamed of his enthusiasm for porn, since the performers and directors now appear to have abandoned shame in favor of the steely-eyed exultation that always attends success in the great U.S. market. Wherever else it is, porn is no longer in the shadows and slums. As Max's scarlet-clad crewman put it, in a way, it's kind of a drag. Now everybody's watching it. We used to be rebels. Now we're fucking businessmen. The thing to recognize is that the adult industry's new respectability creates a paradox. The more acceptable in modern culture it becomes, the farther porn will have to go in order to preserve the sense of unacceptability that's so essential to its appeal. As should be evident, the industry's already gone pretty far, and with reenacted child abuse and barely disguised gang rapes now selling briskly, it is not hard to see where porn is eventually going to have to go in order to retain its edge of disrepute. Whether or not it ever actually gets there, it's clear that the real horizon late 90s porn is heading toward is the snuff film. It's also clear, with all moral and cultural issues totally aside, that this is an extremely dangerous direction for the adult film industry to have to keep moving in. It seems only a matter of time before another conservative politician sees in mainstream porn an outrage sufficient to hang his public ambitions on. The Adult Video Association, after all, is not the only powerful lobby with an interest in social norms. At this point, anyway, porn's own internal contradictions, for example, constantly offending mainstream values, entailing the billions of dollars that attend mainstream popularity, look to be the industry's most dangerous enemy. Harold Hecuba and Dick Filth, by the way, have heard Max hold forth many times before and are now outside the circle of discourse. Filth in the bathroom for what seems like a peculiarly long time, Hecuba on the couch with the actresses hashing out the implications of Seinfeld's retirement for NBC's 98 lineup. Alone and in a place of conspicuous honor on a wood-finished shelf above the suite's minibar is an actual AVN Award statuette. The trophy resembles an Oscar, Emmy, Clio, except that the figurine's arms are up and out, making it also look a bit like Richard Nixon at the climax of the 68 GOP convention. And something slightly blurry about the casting gives it a sort of cubic zirconium aspect. Whether the statuette is heavy and solid versus hollow and little leaguish remains unknown. There is no invitation to touch or heft it. One of the B-girls on the couch is now either laughing or weeping into her hands at something Harold Hecuba has said. Her bare shoulders heave. It would be totally fantastic if the Seinfeld rerun on the huge TV were the episode about everybody trying to refrain from masturbating, but it isn't. Asked by one of your correspondents what he won the AVN Award on the shelf for, Max Hardcore slaps his knee. I fucking stole it. It's now that hard middle-distance inspection reveals that the Max Hardcore on the metal strip at the trophy's base has been scratched in by someone who is not a professional engraver. It looks done with a screwdriver, in fact. Max expands on the statuette caper. Shut inexplicably out of the awards for years, he last year, upon exiting the stage, he's always a presenter every year, which he regards as the AVNA's way of twisting the emotional blade. He espied in the wings a large cardboard box filled with blank and unused AVN award statuettes. Here, your correspondent's suspicion that the AVNA statuettes are bought in bulk, possibly hot, feels somehow confirmed. Whereupon he thought, as he now puts it, "What the fuck, I fucking deserve it," and snagged one, hiding it in his enormous Stetson and deriving no little satisfaction from attending various post-awards parties with an illicit statuette under his hat. Max's crew all laugh very hard at this anecdote, though the actresses don't. Alex Dane is now telling Harold Hecuba about a stray dog she found and has decided to keep. She is excited as she describes the dog and for a moment seems about 14. The impression lasts only a second or two and is heartbreaking. One of the B-girls, meanwhile, is explaining that she has just gotten a pair of cutting-edge breast implants that she can actually adjust the size of by adding or draining fluid via small valves under her armpits, and then, perhaps mistaking your correspondent's expressions for ones of disbelief, she raises her arms to display the valves. There really are what appear to be valves. So much about today's adult industry seems like an undeft parody of Hollywood and the nation writ large. The top performers are comic book caricatures of sexual allure. The prosthetic breasts and lifted buttocks and, no kidding, artificial cheekbones are nothing more than accentuations of a mentality that yields huge liposuction and collagen industries. The gynecologically explicit sexuality of Jenna, Jasmine, et al. Seems more than anything like a Mad Magazine spoof of the, quote, smoldering sexuality of Sharon Stone and Madonna and so many other mainstream iconettes. And of the ubiquitous smolder that's so much a part of 90s commercial culture. Mr. Harold Hecuba, for instance, during one of the marathon screenings of award-nominated videos mentioned earlier in one of the notes, pointed out that the relation between a Calvin Klein ad and a hardcore adult film is essentially the same as the relation between a funny joke and an explanation of what's funny about that joke. Not to mention the fact that the adult industry takes many of the psychological deformities that Hollywood is famous for, the vanity, the vulgarity, the rank commercialism, and not only makes them overt and grotesque, but seems then to revel in that grotesquerie. Good old Max Hardcore, for instance, is a total psychopath. That's part of his on-screen gonzo persona. But so is the real Max or Paul Steiner. You'd almost have to have been there in that suite. Max sits holding court in his hat and pointy boots, looking at once magisterial and mindless, while his red-suited acolytes laugh on cue and a junior high dropout shows off her valves. In truth, the first 10 minutes of the impromptu interview in the Sahara are spent passing around a copy of something called Icon Magazine, which Max has told us is doing a profile on him. We are expected to leaf through the magazine and comment favorably on its content and layout, while Max watches us in the same hyper-expectant way that parents watch you when you're looking at a snapshot of their kid that they've taken out uninvited and pressed on you. This is the actual chronology. There then follows a torrent of autobiography and background that your correspondents have decided to deny Max the satisfaction of seeing reproduced here, after which is a kind of Max 101-like survey of personal philosophy and gonzo theory and the statuette anecdote. The vodka is top shelf and the plastic cups dusty. Then one of the starlets decides that she's hungry, and Max insists on escorting her down to the Sahara's restaurant and wants everybody else to come along, which eventually results in the B-girls and crewmen and your correspondents all standing there awkwardly at the maitre d's podium while Max personally conducts the starlet to her table and pulls out her chair and tucks a serviette into her cleavage and pulls out a platinum-plated money clip and announces in a voice audible to everyone in the restaurant and foyer that he, quote, wants to take care of the little girl's damages in advance, and shoves bills into the hanky pocket of the maitre d's tuxedo and then leaves her there by herself and herds us all back out and into the elevator and jabs impatiently at the button for his suite's floor, almost jumping up and down with fury at the elevator's delay. And we're all rushed back up to the suite, because it's occurred to Max that he wants to show your correspondent something from this week's filming that he thinks will sum up his particular porn genius better than any amount of exposition could. And then, reseated, he starts flipping through a notebook to find something. He says, "What it is we got this one little girl back in the trailer, and after some face-fucking.
Fellatio? Very energetic French kissing?
And reaming her asshole and, like, your standard depravities, we get her to stick a pen, no, a what do you call? Crewman. Magic marker. Max. Magic marker, stick it up her asshole and write all this stuff, unquote. Holding up the notebook, open to a page. Again, he has us pass it around. I'm a little fuckhole is thereon written in a hand,
so to speak,
that seems impressively legible, considering. Dick Filth makes a waggish inquiry about future film plans involving this girl and a typewriter, but Max doesn't laugh. We notice that Max never laughs at a joke he hasn't told, and so neither does anyone else. Doubtless most of this is going to get cut by Premiere, but it's worth also observing when this magazine's assigned photographer, who's also gotten in here with us this afternoon on Hecuba and Filth's coattails, begins wondering aloud about the possibility of getting some good portraits at the awards of winners holding their statuettes. The way Max right away jumps in with his idea of the perfect photo for the title page of this very Premiere magazine article. The proposed shot is to be of Max Hardcore, holding several of the Avian Awards trophies he pledges either to win straight up or to gain possession of in other ways, seated in some kind of imperial-looking and really nice chair that is itself set up on the palm-studded boulevard of the famous Las Vegas Strip, so the photographer will get lots of smeary neon and appropriately phallic buildings in the background, with a retinue of scantily clad starlets either draped swoonily over him or prostrate at his feet, or both. It is important to note that there are no audible scare quotes, no irony or embarrassment or self-awareness of any sort on Max's face as he sketches this photo's tableau for us. He's in the kind of earnest that one imagines Irving Thalberg was always in. Your correspondents immediately begin to lobby hard for Max's idea, figuring that the photo would make a great illustration for the story of Max's proposing this very photo. That is, that it would point up the megalomania far more powerfully than mere reportage. But the Premiere magazine photographer, who is no actor, does such a poor job of disguising his repulsion at Max's self-regard that the atmosphere of the whole suite gets stilted and complexly hostile, and the rest of the interview is kind of a fizzle yield. And overall, Dick Filth said that we failed, in his phrase, to, quote, penetrate to the core of the essence of what it is to be Max Hardcore, close quote.
Apparent pun accidental, although one of your correspondents, on receiving Filth's overall review in the fleeing taxi, responded that surely we had penetrated as far into the core of Max as any sentient organism could ever want to penetrate. Filth's subsequent rebuttal, which consisted mainly of a long string of unsubstantiatable Max Hardcore stories, is, for basic legal reasons, here omitted.
The 15th annual AVN Awards are actually split over two consecutive nights, a tactic that Max H. thought the legitimate Oscars would do well to emulate. Quote, get all the bullshit out of the way the first night. Best packaging, marketing, best gay, shit like that. Who wants to sit through that shit? Close quote. Held in a different, slightly smaller Caesar's Palace ballroom, Friday's awards show is indeed brisk. The ephemeral categories include Best Videography, Best Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Music. Each category's nominees are listed in the program, but only the winners are announced on stage, and they're announced four at a time, and applause is discouraged. And the Master of Ceremonies keeps telling the quartets of winners that, quote, if you'll come on up quickly and help keep things moving, it'll help us out a lot. Friday's only food is big wheels of vegetables and dip near the cash bar. The MC is not headliner Robert Schimmel, but a hypomanic guy named Dave Tyree, whose interpolated banter is 78 RPM and consists of stuff like, if God didn't want us to jerk off, he would have made our arms shorter. There are maybe 1,000 people in attendance, most only slightly dressed up, and there are no assigned tables, and everybody in the ballroom is moving around and chattering and treating the onstage proceedings the way people in a cocktail lounge treat the piano player. Question. $4 billion and 8,000 new releases a year. Why is adult video so popular in this country? Answer 1. director and AVN Hall of Fame inductee F.J. Lincoln. It's always a little funny how it's called adult. What it really is, you get to be a kid again. You roll around and get dirty. It's the adult sandbox. Answer 2. Veteran woodman Joey Silvera. Dudes, let's face it. America wants to jerk off. Answer 3. Industry journalist Harold Hecuba. It's the new Barnum. Nobody ever goes broke overestimating the rage and misogyny of the average American male. Answer 4. Porn starlet Jacqueline Lick. I think a lot of fans are very lonely people. Question. There don't seem to be a whole lot of condoms used in hardcore scenes. Answer. Harold Hecuba. Never have been. They're viewed as a turnoff. This business is about engineering fantasies. Question. But even just venereally, all these anal shenanigans and everything, is there much worry in the industry about HIV? Answer. Harold Hecuba. There's not as much worry about AIDS now. Everybody gets tested on a schedule. Question. What about herpes? Answer. Harold Hecuba. I think it's rampant. Last year's Best Sex Scene in a Film winner Vince Voyer's real name turns out to be John LaForme. Rhetorical question. How, if one's real name was John LaForme, could that person possibly feel the need for a nom de guerre? Mr. Tom Byron describes being able to tumesce and ejaculate more or less on demand as an exercise in, quote, control, like meditation or surfing. It's like a gymnast staying on the balance beam. You practice enough, you can do anything. Mr. Tom Byron, by the way, who broke into the industry in the mid-80s as a young man whose adolescent skinniness and howdy-doody-ish aspect were as compelling and distinctive as his penis, is now having the same weird thing happen to his face that Christopher Walken seemed to have happen to his face sometime after The Dead Zone. It's not just that Byron's freckles are now gone or that his eyes have taken on a dead menace. The actual skin of his face has become shiny and sort of plasticized looking, overtaught in the way a death mask is overtaught. For anyone who remembers what Byron looked like as a kid fresh out of the University of Houston, his face now, after 13 years at the top of his trade, is a chilling contradiction of the industry's claim that it's all about pleasure and unfettered play. Former woodman and current auteur Paul Thomas was a member of the original Broadway cast of Jesus Christ Superstar. The tall, crazed-looking, and ever-rampant Mike Horner, 3-time Best Actor winner and a member of the AVN Hall of Fame, is actually a classically trained opera singer. Deceased starlet Nancy Kelly's real name was Kelly Van Dyke. She was the daughter of TV's Jerry Van Dyke and so, of course, the niece of Dick. Exotic rookie actress Midori, one of the nominees in the 98 AVNA's Best New Starlet category, is the sister of 80s pop star Jodie Watley. Midori has stated publicly that she views upscale contemporary porn as a stepping stone to a mainstream career, not unlike becoming Miss America or doing a couple seasons on Saturday Night Live. Harold Hecuba characterizes Midori's career strategy as grievously ill-advised. Adult Video News Vice President and Executive Editor Gene Ross, presenting the 1998 AVN Award for Best Director, Video, to miscreants Rob Black, will hail Mr. Black as, quote, a guy who can take buttholes, midgets, and fried fish and make a love story. From The New Yorker's 1995 article on the psychosexual plight of the adult industry's woodmen, quote, the Cal Jammers who are part of this feminization feel they have stormed the walls of female ornament to reclaim male prerogative, only to find themselves lost in a garden of gender irony, unquote. Mr. John Buttman Stagliano, CEO of Evil Angel Incorporated, a man described by U.S. News and World Report as, quote, the nation's leading director of hardcore videos, close quote, not only has publicly announced testing positive for HIV, but has identified the infection's vector as a transsexual prostitute in Sao Paulo with whom Stagliano had unprotected anal intercourse in 1995. He's anxious that people not get the wrong idea. Quote, I am not particularly interested in guys, but I am interested in dicks. Forbidden taboos lead to all sorts of neurotic behavior, which leads to me being fucked in the ass without a rubber, Close quote. Are the AVN Awards possibly rigged? Max Hardcore, he of the purloined statuette, keep in mind, calls the awards, quote, a total conflict of interests. After all, he explains, adult video news is heavily ad-dependent, and they're under, quote, pressure from the big hitters like Vivid and VCA to, like, you know, give the nod, close quote.
Let us note that the slick, full-color, 15th annual AVNA official program is itself an advertiser-sponsored document. Its lists of categories and nominees scattered among full-page production company ads hyping the nominated films themselves. This doesn't seem beyond the pale. Certainly Variety does the same sort of thing at Oscar time. Other ads in the AVNA program are for things like Wet Platinum brand lubricant, stays slick even underwater, never dries, will not harm latex. Plus there are several from California Exotic Novelties Corporation, maker of the Ramrod penile pump, of Doc Jock's incredible jack-off device, and of the, quote, Anna Mahl facsimile full-sized kneeling doll. Kneeling position, ready to be taken. Exciting anal penetration. Ripe, luscious, squeezable breasts. These are all bulleted items in the ad, by the way. Vibrating action. Beautiful black hair. Bend over and take me now. Whether these ads are niche directed at industry insiders, which is doubtful, although these are pretty much the only ones who are going to see the programs, at retailers or at plain old mooks is unclear.
All right, recall now, we're back at the main text question about whether the AVN Awards are rigged. Here's Ms. Ellen Thompson, AVN associate editor and an awards judge who votes under the nom de guerre Ida Slapter. Quote, we've heard this for years. I hear this complaining also goes on in the mainstream. I don't like insulting anybody, but sometimes they're sour grapes. What are we supposed to say? Vivid and VCA put out good product. We truly, honestly do vote fairly. Close quote. From Mr. Dick Filth, quote, the best perception, backed up by tons of anecdotal evidence, is that they are totally, totally fixed and rigged. Close quote.
There are 45 official voters listed in the awards program. Here are some of their names. A.V. Shoot, Rich C. Leather, Marlon Brandeis, Roland Tug on It, Stroker Palmer, S. Andrew Roberts and Slave Girl. So actually, there are either 45 or 44 official voters, depending on whether Slave Girl gets her own vote or is just along to rubber stamp S. Andrew Roberts's vote. Oddly, Ms. Ellen Thompson appears on the list both as Ida Slapter and as Ellen Thompson, so one sort of wonders just how many ontologically distinct voters there actually are. Nor does an independent Big Six accounting firm tally the ballots in secret under armed guard or any of that Oscar-type security. According to Slapter/Thompson, the awards voting is secret, but the completed ballots are all turned in to Paul Fishbein and Gene Ross, who are the publisher and vice president, and Fishbein a co-owner of Adult Video News, and who thus have an obvious interest in happy sponsors and healthy ad revenues. The whole thing inspires something less than rock-solid confidence.
Saturday's the big night. The banquet, the onstage entertainment, the headline awards. See and be seen. Gamblers and conventioneers and mooks of all ilk are massed at the Caesars cab stand to watch the starlets arrive. There are camcorders and flash bulbs, but no paparazzi per se. Some of the performers come in limos, others in shiny, penile sports cars. Others seem to mysteriously just suddenly appear. There are even more starlets here than there were at the CES, and they are seriously dolled up. There are cerise halters and pear-colored lycra bodysuits with open-toed pumps of burgundy suede. There are platinum lamé gowns slit all the way to the 10th rib. Bottoms less covered than shellacked look like they by all rights should have panty or at least thong lines, but do not have such lines. There are lime green vinyl leotards and toile bell bottoms and fish scale bustiers and miniskirts the same texture and length as a tutu's ruffle. Garter straps flash and merry widow bodices shade the interiors of translucent blouses. Several of the outfits defy very basic precepts of modern physics. Coiffures are towering and complex. The starlets are all in the arms of men, but none of these escorts are male porn performers. Average heel height is 4 inches plus. A loud-voiced civilian in the cab stand crowd actually utters the phrase va-va-voom, which your correspondents had never before heard anywhere outside a Sinatra movie. Breasts are uniformly Zeppelin-esque and in various perilous stages of semi-confinement. Max Hardcore is under a Stetson the color of weak chocolate milk, and his adjustable B-girl, arrayed in a type of scarlet cowboy suit that's mostly fringe, has inflated her breasts to what has just got to be maximum capacity. Woodman-wise, Black is clearly in at the 15th annual AVN Awards. A lot of the men are in black tuxedos and black ties and black dress shirts. One is wearing a paisley suit of either serge or some kind of upholstery material. Another has silver platform shoes and a silver vest with no shirt underneath. The Explore boys are in Klein sweatshirts and urban camouflage fatigues, and there's a large contingent with them that may or may not include the South Park Brain Trust. A guy on the arm of Ms. Morgan Fairlane has an immense and razorous violet mohawk a la British punks of the late 1970s. Inside the hotel, a kind of impromptu cocktail party forms in the broad marble hall outside Caesar's Palace's largest and reportedly classiest ballroom, which is called Caesar's Forum. Burly casino staffers stand taking tickets and being very discouraging about anybody trying to bum-rush the show. The crush of bodies out here entails a degree of physical contact that CES mooks never even dreamed of. There are pockets of Klieg glare as cable TV reporters interview various performers about, quote, the air of keen excitement in the air, close quote. Mysterious bundles of coax emerge from under the forum doors and go all the way up the length of the hallway and disappear around the corner. A suspicion that we'd had all week but decided was unverifiable is now instantly verified when one of your correspondents gets accidentally shoved against a starlet and is jabbed in the side by her breasts and it hurts. A lot of people are holding drinks in plastic glasses and it's unclear where they got them. The starlets take turns getting interviewed regarding atmospheric excitement, while the woodmen all avoid the cameras like mafiosi. The TV lights are not doing anyone's skin tone any good at all. In their all-black tuxes, several of the male insiders, including, for example, John Leslie and Tony Tedeschi, look so pallid and sallow as to appear diseased. Mr. Nick East devotes a full 5.5 minutes of rapt concentration to the cuticle of his left thumb. A slight surprise is that a lot of the industry's elite woodmen are short, 5'6", 5'7", and most of their companions tower over them. What many of the top woodmen resemble most are gymnasts. They're compact and muscular and move with the liquid economy of athletes, as if equipped with internal gyroscopes. Little of their physical grace is ever visible on tape. Dick Filth confirms that the contemporary industry's 5'6" standard helps a prodigious male organ look even more prodigious on videotape, a medium that apparently does all kinds of strange things to perspective. Tickets for Saturday's main event are $195 per in advance. It's unknown whether any insiders' tickets are comped, but journalists pay full retail. Our tickets designate our table as number 189. 2,500 tickets have been sold, and since it's highly doubtful that anybody got past the flinty-eyed casino guys outside without a ticket, tonight's attendance can confidently be fixed at 2,500. The Caesars Forum ballroom itself is a huge L-shape with the stage at the, as it were, joint. Thus, half of the 15th annual AVN Awards audience is geometrically invisible to the other half. This problem is addressed via 6 sail-sized video screens that hang from the ceiling at strategic points throughout the auditorium. During the nearly 2 hours between when the doors open and the awards show actually starts, the screens alternate quick clips from porn classics. Recall that the theme of the 15th annual AVN Awards is the history of adult, with live shots of various people making their entrances and mugging for the remote cameras AVN has got circling the room. Both Harold Hecuba and Dick Filth have come equipped with binoculars, Hecuba's in a very official-looking Audubon Society case, which seems mysterious until we all arrive at table 189, which is at the very, very back of the ballroom's L's northern leg, hundreds of yards from even the nearest video screen. They always put the print guys out in mook land, Hecuba explains. This fact is unpleasant surprise number one. Unpleasant surprise number two is the supper the $195 ticket includes, which turns out to be buffet steam table style and might best be described by inviting you to imagine a very cosmopolitan and multi-ethnic hospital cafeteria.
There is something deeply surreal about standing behind a female performer in hot pink peau de soie, a woman whose clitoris and perineum you have priorly seen, and watching her try to get a microwaved egg roll onto her plate with a cocktail fork.
Several of the male insiders, we now notice, have brought in their own picnic hampers. Now moving with laden plate to a table near us is a man in a full-body leopard skin suit whose way of acknowledging people he knows is to point at them rather than waving at them. On his arm is a B-girl in a body stocking made of what appears to be a very densely woven net. Two Astral Ocean contract starlets have on identical copper-colored beaded gowns with myriad lengthwise slits in the skirt parts' fronts and backs and sides, so that as they walk to their table, their upper halves look normal and their lower halves seem to be passing through an infinity of bead curtains. Obviously, the whole scene is overwhelming. The average American rarely gets to see aerobic leg warmers with 4-inch spike heels. The Caesars Forum ceiling is the color of rancid meringue. It has 24 chandeliers that are designed to look like concentric opened fans, but actually look more like labia or very well-organized fungus. Mr. Joey Buttafuoco is in the house, accompanying,
platonically,
Al Goldstein of Screw, who is here to receive a special AVN Achievement Award for his lifelong defense of the First Amendment. Black is so resoundingly in this year that even the starched linen napkins at everyone's place settings are black. The wine glasses all have little frosted cameos of Julius Caesar on them. Humorless men with walkie-talkies stand guard at each of the ballroom's fire doors. Apparently last year there were some problems with unauthorized Caesar's Palace employees sneaking in to watch the gala. The video screens are now showing the climactic scene from Debbie Does Dallas, the one where the nebbishy little stand-in for all mooks everywhere finally has sex with Bambi Woods, and then the screen flashes, "Next?" The South Park boys are indeed in attendance, up at table 37 with Farrell and the Explorer coterie. There are also rumors that Boogie Nights auteur Paul Thomas Anderson possesses a ticket to the gala and might show up.
Despite the fact that the movie presents everybody in porn as cretinous, pathetic, or both, the adult industry has evidently embraced Boogie Nights the same way the music industry embraced This Is Spinal Tap, and the Anderson rumor, which never comes to anything, if Paul Thomas Anderson ever shows, it's deeply incognito, generates the least cynical enthusiasm of the evening.
The closest thing to any kind of insider table near ours is number 182, which according to its black table tent is reserved for anabolic video, not an industry force, and is currently occupied by a spiriferously coiffed and sullenly chewing Dinah Jewel, who declines to return Harold Hecuba's blown kiss, and by her escort, a young fellow whom one can easily envision headbutting somebody in a mosh pit. Dick Filth confides that this anabolic guy is a close friend of Woodman Vince Voyer, who himself is not up for many 98 awards because he spent a good part of the past year in court and or detention for helping operate an escort service which authorities alleged was not a bona fide escort service at all. It turns out that Hecuba and Filth have kept from your correspondence as unpleasant surprise number three the single chintziest thing about the $195 ahead 15th annual AVNA banquet and gala. Beverages are not compris, and not just alcohol either. Even a lousy club soda with lime,
we're on duty,
is $6. Worse, it turns out you can't run any sort of tab. You have to pay the waiter in cash when you order the lousy club soda with lime, and he, theoretically, brings your change back with the beverage. Thus, a separate and memory-intensive transaction is required for each drink that each of the 6 to 8 persons at each of the approximately 375 tables in the auditorium might order, with additional complications if certain people are buying drinks for certain tablemates but not for certain other tablemates, etc.
For instance, Harold Hecuba has strictly enjoined us from buying any sort of distilled beverage for Dick Filth for reasons that become clear as the evening wears on.
The whole unfree drink situation is incredibly annoying, not only because of the outlandish ticket price, but because the ballroom's 100% Middle Eastern waiters, decent and hardworking fellows all, to be sure, who are taking some serious abuse about the pay-as-you-go beverage policy from mooks with cigars at the nearby tables, despite the fact that the waiters don't make the rules and must surely find having to remember and make change for 6 to 8 different customers per table a piercing pain in the ass, have only rudimentary ESL skills and tend to confuse both drink orders and currency denominations.
The waiter's special 15th annual AVNA fringe benefit, which sharply reduced your correspondent's empathy with them, wasn't revealed until the gala concluded. Details upcoming.
Dick Filth leans over and shouts, "Now you can maybe see why this is a multi-billion-a-year industry. They're tight as a duck's butt."
Filth is shouting because between the screen's clips audio and the stage band warming atonally up and the ambient conversational roar, it's close to deafening in here. When the award show starts, the audio techs will have the amplifiers turned all the way up to shattering, which, even though it will tend to cause mussed hair and spill drinks in both directions front rows, those of us way back in mook land appreciate.
The crowd lingers over hyper-Socratic cake and coffee and $9 cordials and howls conversation at itself for 90 more minutes before the house lights dim and the 15th annual AVN Awards gala starts. What follows thereon is a kaleidoscopic flux of stilted acceptances and blue one-liners and epileptic strobes and spotlights following winners' serpentine and high-five-studded paths to the stage, of everything from generic award show schmaltz to moments of near-periclean eloquence, as in, for example, quote, "Fellow Mensa members and aficionados of Shakespeare," intones Al Goldstein of Screw, 62 and obese and white-bearded and crazy-haired and dressed in a sport coat whose lapels are 2 different primary colors, looking pretty much exactly like that one certain old guy in the neighborhood your mom warned you never to try to sell Cub Scout chocolate mints to, and glorying in a special AVN Achievement Award he confesses to feeling he's long deserved. Quote, "I want to thank my mother, who spread her legs and made all this possible," close quote. Large sections of the crowd are on their feet. Goldstein is a porn icon. He was distributing New York City's Screw on Photostat when most of the people in this room were still playing with their toes. He's been a First Amendment ninja. He drinks in the applause and loves it and is hard not to sort of almost actually like. He's clearly an avatar of contemporary porn's unabashedness. It's modern, "Yeah, okay, I'm scum, but underneath all your hypocrisy, so are you, and at least I have the guts to admit it and have a good time" persona. Quote, "I salute the women with 11 IQs and the men with 11-inch cocks. The real heroes are the cocks and pussies who fuck on screen. They're the real heroes," close quote. Goldstein is less conducted than borne back to his seat. This has followed Robert Schimmel's intro and a 20-minute musical salute to the history of adult, in which topless dancing girls do a medley of disco, new wave, and so on.
As both the screen's preliminary clips and the musical salute indicate, Adult Video News appears to believe that the history of adult begins circa 1975, when in fact this is merely the year when the locus of U.S. porn moved from New York to California.
The stage band is ragged and unevenly amplified, and they all have flared collars and tight perms. It's like watching the Brady Bunch's final season through borrowed binoculars. The stage is lit by auto-track spotlights whose colors alternate without discernible scheme. The whole 15th annual AVNA Award show lasts 3.5 hours and resembles nothing so much as an obscene and extremely well-funded high school assembly. The mix of garish self-congratulation and clumsy choreography is often so weird as to be endearing. There are never fewer than 6 presenters for each award, and they never seem to know whose turn it is to announce a nominee, and there are always a couple who don't get close enough to the mic to be audible, and a couple others who get too close to the mic and produce a jolt of feedback that sends people and cocktails flying out of chairs in the first rows of tables. Wicked Pictures' Sater, a multiple-category nominee, gets repeatedly pronounced Satter. Winners are supposed to exit stage left after their acceptance speeches, but even people who've won and been through the process several times in recent years keep forgetting and trying to exit stage right and colliding with the hostesses who are there to escort them leftward. Some presenters insert brief, rote anti-drug messages into their intros, while around them twitch and sniff other presenters, not many, but some, who are obviously coked to the gills. Probably the most neutral and economical thing to say is that large parts of the ceremony are unintentionally funny. Winning Woodmen extend earnest thanks to directors and execs for giving them, quote, an opening, or, quote, a shot, or, quote, my big shot, and seem wholly unaware of the carnal entendres involved. Back at the journalist table with us is a 40-ish woman in two-piece Armani who's doing a spot